This is Keeping It Real with Frankie D, an Italian-American podcast, and I am your proud host, Frankie D, and my guest today is Gloria Coco. Gloria Coco was appointed judge of the Circuit Court in 1991, serving in the Domestic Violence Division since 1994, and as supervising judge of the division from 1997 until her retirement in 2007. As supervising judge, Gloria oversaw five courtrooms handling approximately 53,000 domestic violence cases per year from the city of Chicago. While serving as a judge, Gloria pursued her interest in the arts, graduated summa cum laude from Northwestern University School of Communications with a degree in radio, television, film, and the theater performance in 2004. Among the plays she has penned is The Passages of Grace, about her family's harrowing experiences on Ellis Island. Her numerous television credits include roles in Southland, The Defenders, and Parks and Recreation. She has acted in Public Enemy, starring Johnny Depp, as well as several indie films, and has done commercial work for the likes of Coca-Cola and Tropicana. And I have to say, Tropicana, and I don't know if you know this, but we're all about everything Italian-American here. The company Tropicana, Tropicana Products, was founded by an Italian immigrant, better yet, a Sicilian immigrant, Anthony Rossi from Messina, Sicily. And this is a true story. And he also perfected this type of, refrigeration thing, fermentation, something with juice coming from Florida and being able to travel. Was a genius, and that's very ironic that you were in the commercials for Tropicana. Gloria Coco, welcome to the show.
It is an honor, and I'm very happy to share this mic with you this afternoon.
Thank you. It's an honor to have you. This is a very impressive resume. You've done so much, and you are continuing to do things. That's wonderful. First, let's touch on, are you a Chicago girl by birth?
Yes, I am. Born and raised on the South Side.
South
Beverly.
Side. Okay. Oh, in Beverly. All right. Far South Side of Chicago.
Yes. It's at St. Barnabas Grammar School, Mother Macaulay High School. Then went to Mundelein. Then graduated from Northern Illinois College of Law. And when I was on the bench, I did return to school to Northwestern. Took me 10 years, but I did get that degree finally.
You like to study.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, you know, when I was a teacher first when I graduated from college, and I started going to law school at night, teaching during the day, law school at night, and things were really tough. And I was a second career student for law school.
What were you teaching though, like high school?
Chicago Public Schools, primary grades at Stewart School, Wisdom Broadway.
Really?
Right. And I would go home, and my mother would, you know, on weekends she would do my laundry and cook, and there's no one who does your laundry better than your mother. One of the conversations I had, we would try to solve all the problems of the world over a pot of coffee. And one time I said, Mom, you know what? Maybe this law school thing isn't such a good idea. I mean, by the time I'm graduating, I'm going to be 28. And my mother, who was so loved education, looked at me and said, Gloria, you're going to be 28 anyway. Why not be 28 and a lawyer?
That's a very good point. I never thought of that.
Which then helped me when I wanted to become a judge. I'm going to be 40 anyway. Why not be 40 and a judge? But also, when I went back to school at Northwestern, I was twice as old as every student in my class. But my mother's words rang true to me because I was like, well, I'm going to be 54 anyway. Why not be 54 with that degree that I always wanted to get in theater?
That's a special trait, because most people would not attempt it because they'd say, I'm too old. I'll be too old when I finish. So you did it not only once, but twice.
Inspiring words from my mother, a Sicilian immigrant.
Very nice. Okay, so you are Sicilian.
I am.
Tell me about your Sicilian background.
Well, my mother was born in a beautiful little town, Tricastagni, Three Chestnuts, which is in the province of Catania. And it's the third village down from Mount Etna. I think it's Nicolosi, Padara, Tricastagni.
Tricastagni.
Yes, Tricastagni.
So it's Tricastagni.
Correct.
Wow, okay.
And she was born there in 1914. And she came over to this country with a widowed mother and her little brother Freddie in 1921. My father's family was from the same town. And some of my father's sisters were born in Turkestani, but he was born in Chicago because the family had immigrated already.
Do you know what area in Chicago they all settled in?
Yes, in Chinatown, in the parish of Santa Maria in Coronado, where my parents got married, which is about 24th and Alexander in Chinatown.
Oh, okay.
So that group of Sicilians, there was a Sicilian colony there.
Right. And there was probably a lot of people from their town, that
correct.
Specific town.
Right.
So they met growing up. And
of course, that community was very much involved with the Santa Maria Coronado.
Which, the church is still there.
Yes, it is.
Correct?
Now it's a Chinese missionary church.
Is that right?
But I did get married there. When
did
I got
you?
Married in 2001, I went back and got married in the church.
Oh, very nice.
Where my parents got married.
Okay.
In 1934.
And you have been to Italy, I would assume.
Yes, I've been to Italy a number of times, and Sicily as well, and I had the fortune of visiting my mother's town with her.
Oh, you did get to go with your mother?
Yes, I did.
How was that for her, first of all? Was that like the first time she went back?
It was the second time.
Okay.
The first time she went back was with my father on a tour, but this time we went in May. There was a great feast for the three saints, the Turkestani is
okay.
Named after. Felipe, Charles, and this one of them.
And the other guy.
Yeah,
that's okay. That's
guy.
Like the three
so,
times.
Yeah,
no problem.
Yeah. So we went back during that time, during the festival, and we did find, though, my mother's grandfather's house. And I went back and looked at the records because the municipal hall was open, and we were able to find the address of where my mother grew up and do that. But the festival was going on, so they had all types of different
activities
and things, and kiosks set up. So it kind of, you know, compromised the street as it was.
Oh, I
but
see.
We were
okay.
able to find it.
Okay.
Anyway, but it was just amazing to sit in the piazza with my mother in her home.
That had to be a great feeling.
Yes, absolutely.
What's your impression of Italy on the whole? I assume you've traveled throughout other parts of it.
Yes, all throughout.
Mm-hmm.
I've been just about from northern Italy down. Yes, to Sicily and spent some time in Rome. I've had that fortune. But I tell you, when I come back from Sicily, right. I am so proud to be a Sicilian American. And my husband, who is Irish, reminds me, you know, Gloria, when people ask you, you know, what you are, what your nationality, don't say Italian American. You are Sicilian.
More specifically, yes.
Yes.
That's nice.
And I am so proud of that.
That's wonderful.
Because we have such a rich history.
Yes.
Sicily was a pawn of wars for centuries. And if you read the history, we have a little bit of everything. You know, the Arabs, the Saracens, the Normans. One time, Sicily was in direct competition to be the jewel of Mediterranean. It was direct competition with Athens. In fact, Plato lived in Syracuse.
Is that
right? So much of our history, there is so much wealth there, and it really does make you so very, very
well. That's
proud.
Wonderful. I love the way you're proud of it. I love the way you explain it. That's great. That's very great. Okay, let's talk about your career, the first career, because you have many careers. So you became a lawyer,
teacher first.
Then you went to law school, became a lawyer.
Yes.
And then. Where did the idea even to become a judge come from?
Well, I was fortunate enough that when I graduated from law school, I was able to get a job as an assistant state's attorney in Brooklyn County. And I was criminal law for those 5 years. And then from the Brooklyn County State's Attorney's Office, I went to the Illinois Attorney General's Office. And I created a program for the prosecution of state frauds cases, first time there were felonies in the state. Mike Ficarro was my boss, terrific guy. And
an Italian-American, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Great.
Yes.
Okay.
But when I was at the state attorney's office, you know, every day you go to work and you don't go to an office. Your office is the courtroom. And so the skill set that I learned at the state attorney's office of course, was a stepping stone to transfer to my position as an assistant attorney general. And it was at that time that I then went to work for the city of Chicago after the attorney general's office, city of Chicago for the Department of Buildings. But I always wanted to become a judge because when you went to work every day, you look up and you saw that role model. And my father was a role model. My father graduated from Chicago Kent College of Law in 1931.
Well, your father was a lawyer.
Yes.
I did not know that.
And so, of course, he was my role model on many platforms. But when I was in the state's attorney's office, the attorney general, because I had a lot of cases for these felonies at 26th in California. So as a prosecutor for both county state's attorney and for the Illinois attorney general, I was always in court. That was my job. And so therefore, I think everything in life will serve you as a stepping stone. And you look up to, where do you go from here? At least I do. What's the next level? What gives you satisfaction? How else can you do service to others? And for me, it was to become a jurist. And I was very fortunate to ascend to the bench in 1921. And I believe, Frank, this is...
Not 1921.
I mean, 1991.
91.
God
okay.
bless. God bless. I'm getting it with the year that my mother came over from
right.
Sicily. But 1991. But it was a great honor. And we did our research on this when I was going for that position for the bench. And I believe it was true because we verified this, that I was the first Italian-American woman of her own birthright, not married to someone, not half, but whole, to ascend to the bench of the Circuit Court of Cook County.
That's incredible.
And then I became the first president of the Justinian Society, first woman president.
First woman president.
To be the president of the Justinian Society of Lawyers in 1993. And the Justinian Society of Lawyers was chartered in 1921.
70 years later?
That is correct.
So you were a member?
My father...
You could be a member. I mean, there were women members of the Justinians.
Correct. And my father used to bring me to the Justinian Society of Lawyers dinners when I was in law school. And there were certain functions they would have that he would bring the family. But I was the first woman to ascend to the presidency. And that was in 1993.
Was your father alive when you became a judge, when you became the president of Justinians?
He was, but he was quite ill at that time. My mother was alive, and she, of course, was there for my swearing-in as a judge, but she died, and she would come to the dinners.
She had to be extremely
but
proud.
You know,
and just for everyone
died,
out there.
She died shortly before I became president. She passed away July 9th, and... I was sworn in as president the following September.
Oh, so a few months later.
Yes.
Okay. And just tell everybody, the Justinian Society of Lawyers, what exactly is
the
that?
The Justinian Society of Lawyers is a bar association affiliation of Italian-American lawyers. Of course, now it is open to all cultures, races, and creeds, of course, whoever wants to join. But it was... At that time, in 1921, a group of Italian-American lawyers who came together to create this community in order to further the initiatives and network of Italian-American lawyers as other bar associations.
It was started here. It's in Chicago.
That's right.
It's just in Chicago.
Yes. Well, now there's chapters all over the state of Illinois. You have chapters in Lake County, DuPage County, Will County, McHenry County, and there are many Italian bar associations across the country. In fact, there's a national bar association, NIABA, the National Italian American Bar Association. So all states and communities, I think, you know.
Have something
yes.
like this. But you served as the first female president in Chicago, the Justinian
right,
Society.
For the Cook County Champion.
That's wonderful. Very nice. So
I have 200 brothers I never had, so it's been wonderful.
That's great.
Yeah.
So your time on the bench was...
Well, may I say there's many other... Well, now you have a number of women who have sent it to the presidency. I was just...
But you were the first.
Yes.
You
yes.
laid down the the tracks there. That's great.
Like my mother said.
That's wonderful, yes. And tell me about the...
It's not if, it's the when.
It's the when.
And the when...
Thinking positive.
Correct. You move forward. Reinvent yourself.
That's true. That's true. Because if we're not moving forward, we're going backwards.
That's right.
Right. So good time, good experience on the bench. It was fulfilling.
It was wonderful. I was 17 years on the bench, mainly hearing criminal cases. And you know, Frank, to be a jurist is a great responsibility.
An incredible responsibility.
Yes, it is, because especially in the area where I served in the domestic violence court, if you have a chance to change a person's life, help them understand that everyone gets angry. You know, people forget, you're the deadly weapon, control the deadly weapon every time you get into your car. Everyone gets angry. But it's how you solve those problems short of violence, which is so important. And so much of what domestic violence is about is power and control. And it's not always between male and female relationships. It's mothers and sons, fathers and daughters, siblings, gay, lesbian, transsexual, bisexual, questionable communities. It touches all communities. And that's why it's just unlearning learned behaviors where you think to solve problems you must be violent. No, it's solving them short of violence. And that's the key to helping them unlearn and oftentimes learn the behaviors.
Very true. Very true. You retired in 2007. Mm-hmm. Now, was that something where you felt, I've done all I can do as a judge, and now I'm going to move on to acting? Or it was like, I need to pursue the acting thing, and I need to have more free time to do it?
Okay. Passion. The word is passion. I always loved theater. My mother sent me to dancing school when I was 3 years old. I had danced on Lunchtime Little Theater, Bozo Circus, so many times by the time I was 10. Did theater in high school, did theater in college, and wanted to major in it. But somehow I followed another path. But that theater thing never left me. So it was when I was on the bench in 1994, I took some classes at Northwestern University. They had a medium program, theater. And
they have a big theater program.
Yes. And after my fourth class, I decided I want to go back and get the degree I always wanted to get. And I had to take some entrance exams and do writing samples to see if they would allow me to matriculate as a student, get towards degree. And I was fortunate that they did. And it took me 10 years. But in 2004, I graduated summa cum laude with a degree in radio, TV, film.
You are persistent. I can see that.
Well, as my mother said, you know, you're going to be 54 anyway, Gloria. Why not be 54 and get that degree?
Very true. Tell me about some of these well-known TV shows you were in or the movie you were in. What was that?
Well, I did some extra work in Chicago. And then I had a friend who told me about this boot camp in L.A., and you went out there and you studied for a week, and then at the end of the week, you would perform for agents and managers in L.A. And maybe you'd get a call from one of them saying, we'd like to represent you. So I went out there and I did this week-long boot camp and performed. And I then went up to Northern California to visit my family. And I was in the California Pizza Kitchen having a pizza with my little 8-year-old godson, and my cell phone rang, and it was an agent. Gloria, we'd like to represent you, but you have to live here in L.A.
Because that's where all the jobs are.
Well, that's where the agent was. It was okay. The L.A. entertainment industry. So I went home, and my wonderful husband understood when I said, I got an agent in L.A., you know. So I did, and it was a great experience. You learn, though, how to embrace rejection. Because I got off that plane, and no one knew who I was or what I did, or frankly, did they care? It was a very humbling experience. And you learn the craft of acting in a different format, because at Northwestern at the time, at North Big Theater, when you act for the camera, it's a different medium because it's one small little eye looking at you. So everything is smaller. So you sort of learn another way of acting.
How long were you in LA?
About 3.5 years. And I was fortunate to book a good number of commercial work, indie work, and some really good episodic stuff. So it was a great, it met a lot of wonderful people. In fact, I still have a lot of dear friends, and I still have my agent there. So I go and see them, and they're waiting for me to return, and who knows?
Oh, you never know the future.
Very well be on the horizon.
Yes.
So, yes.
Okay, some of your Italian stuff. I know that you're a former president of SACA, which is Sicilian American Cultural Association, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So I know you're very proud to be Sicilian. Is that something that that was a good experience?
Great experience. This SACA, the Sicilian American Cultural Association, infuses something a little bit different than what bar associations would do or other associations, in that they really focus on the culture of Sicily. So they bring in artists, performers, they delve into the history of Sicily. And Father Faso, who is the chaplain, is just exquisite in what he does, and Martha Monastero, who has been the secretary for many years, and this year the president.
Has it been around a long time?
SACA?
Yes.
SACA was created in 1994 by a group of Sicilian businessmen and professionals. I know Al Gallo, Vincent and Sarah, just to name a few, were some of those who created this wonderful community. And Joe Monastero, and his brother Sal also, you know, were very much involved in the creation. And most of the meetings during that time were at Monastero's restaurant, which definitely celebrates Sicilian culture, the second music mountain, with every morsel of food that you eat.
Yes. Unfortunately, I guess they were in business for probably 60, more than 60 years.
Yes, they were.
And unfortunately, everything eventually comes to an end, and they did close. But you found another Sicilian place to do your meetings at.
Yes, Cucina Biagio.
Cucina Biagio.
Yes.
Beautiful. Tell me about also, you were, there was a book written in Chicago, Italian Women in Chicago, and I understand you wrote a chapter of it.
Yes.
What did you exactly write about?
I got a call from Dominic Condolaro, who knew I had written this play, which was my senior project at Northwestern. It was a one-woman show called The Passages of Grace. And that was about the experience that my mother had growing up as an immigrant, coming to this country, and then growing up as an immigrant in Chicago. Dominic knew I had written this play, and a shorter version of it, Finding Uncle Alfio. And he said, Gloria, we would like for you to write a piece, one of the 20 pieces that were in this book, but we would like for you to write your play in your grandmother's voice. So I rewrote it in my grandmother's voice, of her experience of what it was like to leave her town of Tricastagni and journey to America, because her oldest daughter, my mother's older sister by 14 years, was already in the United States. In fact, she worked in the woolen mills in Massachusetts, because a lot of Sicilians from my mother's town, Tricastagni, that's where they went, to Lawrence, Massachusetts, to work in the woolen mills there. So that is where Dominic asked me to write this piece, and I did. And then Dominic and Mayo Carboni translated the piece into Italian, and they did a book tour in Italy. And Dominic contacts me and says, Gloria, we're having the final book tour in Rome, and we're going to be performing some things for the Italian Senate. But the one story the people really connect you to is yours, the story of immigration. Please, meet us in Rome for the final leg and do your play for the Italian Senate.
And you did.
I did.
That's great.
I got that information on a Saturday. The following Tuesday, I was on a plane to Rome. And it was such a magnificent experience to do that. And
that had
I have to thank Dominic and Gloria Nardini, who both were the editors
of this book.
Yes, yes. But Dominic was.
And can you tell us quickly the story of your uncle, Alfio?
Yes. In 1921, my widowed grandmother, my 7-year-old mother, and her little brother, Freddie, 4 years old, got on the USS Sophia, departed Palermo for New York to meet my aunt, the oldest daughter, Carmela, who was my mother's older sister, and the oldest daughter of my grandmother. When they got to Ellis Island, because my grandmother was a widow with children and walked with a limb, the immigration authorities didn't think that she could get a job. So they labeled them LPCs, likely public charges, and detained them on Ellis Island for 3 months until relatives that were already in the States could post a higher bond to get them through. During the first 10 days, my little uncle started to get sick. And the nurses and doctors would come around looking for many excuses, any excuse, to put him on a boat and send him back. But they saw these red marks on my uncle's chest and told my grandmother, or explained to her as best they could, that he was very sick, and they transferred him to the contagious disease ward on Ellis Island. He died about 9 days later. And because of the language barrier, they never told my grandmother what he died of or what they did with his body.
So if I understand correctly, he died approximately 3 weeks after arriving?
That is correct. Of scarlet. We found out it was scarlet.
Scarlet fever.
But we found that 80 years later of what he died of. So when my mother died in 1993, her deathbed wish was, find my little brother Alfio. All these years he's been alone somewhere and we don't know where. I wrote the authorities over the years, 30s, 40s, 50s, never got a response. So please find him. So when my mother died in, and that was 93, things now were being put on the computer. The internet was just growing so fast and furiously that some of this information was now there. And we were able to make some phone calls. And it was about in 1998-99 that we finally got the death certificate. And this was through many roadblocks and wrong turns.
A lot of hard work, a lot of persistence.
Yeah, that we got the death certificate, and here was Alfio Mannarino, age 4, country of origin, died at 9 p.m., February 23rd, of scarlet fever, buried in the Maple Grove Cemetery in Queens. Where is that? So when I turned 50, which was in 2000, my husband said, what do you want? You want a party? I said, no, I want to go to New York and go to that cemetery, which we did. We lived in New York. We spent some time there, then we rented a car and drove to Queens and met the people at the cemetery, who took us to a pauper's field in the corner of the cemetery, where we found that my little uncle, with 40, 50, almost 60 children and other people coming to Ellis Island, died, immigrants who died on Ellis Island, were buried in this pauper's field.
What does that mean, pauper's field? Like a massive burial?
It was a mass grave. And the caretaker, and they had a ledger from 1921 that showed us my uncle's entry and all the other names that were in this plot. So when he took us to the plot, and it was in the corner of the cemetery, unkept with crabgrass and weeds. What they had done, they had these concrete walls 6 feet down, but over the years, they sunk in, and you could see that they were coming up, the soil sunk in. And so you could see the tops of the concrete walls. And the caretaker of the cemetery went over to one of them and said, this is where your uncle is, lot 115, section 8. Your uncle, like all the other children, was buried in either a pine coffin or burlap bag, piled on top of each other in trees. Okay, so when I start to write the smaller version of this play, I would call back to get the information for the play. And they were wondering, well, who's this person, this judge from Chicago, who keeps on calling back? So they did, the cemetery did their own investigation. And that's when they realized all the children that were buried there. And they did erect a little monument to this area. But then they also did let me get a plaque for my uncle. But we did just change the plaque to a smaller monument, not just in honor of my uncle, but to all the children of immigrants buried in this section.
Did it bring closure for you?
It did, because he's not alone anymore. My mother's deathbed wish was granted.
Was granted, yes.
It took us some time.
That's okay. That's okay. That's a hell of a story. That's a hell of a story. Gloria Coco, what does the future hold? More acting? More Italian plays?
I hope.
What do you think?
I hope all of the above. And a little teaching.
You would like to teach again?
I do teach a little.
What do you teach?
At Chicago Kent. Once in a while, I'll assist a colleague in teaching, which has been a lot of fun.
So I would assume you're not the type of person to sit still.
No.
You do not like to sit still.
Even though I retired from the bench, I always kept my law license, and I have an agent in Chicago, and as well, I think they did a commercial for United Airlines not too long ago. So you just have to keep on reinventing yourself.
Well, you are a fascinating person.
Age is irrelevant.
Yes,
it's
you are.
It's your state of mind that counts, not that number.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for the interview. You are quite a remarkable person, quite successful, but just I love the passion you have, the realness you have, and your desire to just keep doing. So God bless. Keep doing for you, doing for us, doing for the world, doing for the Italian-American community. Okay?
Thank you so much, Frank.
Thank you.
Thank you for this opportunity to share with you.
Thank you. It was my pleasure. And to everyone out there, have a great Italian American Day.